You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/CivCast. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to CivCast. My name is Kyle, and this week I am joined here by Wouter. Hello, Wouter.
Hey, Kyle.
How's it going on your end, sir?
That's pretty good, except for the bad weather. Lots of rain. I don't like rain so much.
Well, I wish I could send you some of our dry desert heat because, well, we just got out of it. Maybe it's on its way to you. But a summer of the almost 100-degree Fahrenheit weathers has me ready for the cold winters to approach. We've got a bigish change on our end that Dan's not here this week. He's probably freezing his butt off up in Canada, but he's not here because of family things, exciting family things. So we're going to have to hold down the fort without him. What do you think, Founder?
I wish Dan all the luck that he can get because it's probably going to be a very rough couple of weeks in the beginning.
Yeah, let's just say Dan's probably not getting his recommended amount of sleep every night. That's just my guess, you know. Comes with the territory.
I think so as well.
So, he's off doing his thing, which we need him to do that. Go, go, go. So we're going to hold it down. We're going to talk about a bunch of different little Civ things. Now, news has been a little bit flat for Civilization VI in the past about month, right? Since we got the newbie patch. We really haven't heard too much. I haven't seen much posted from them in terms of any new content or even any teases unless I've missed it. Though I fully admit, work has been crazy as students went back to school, so my eye has been a bit distracted from their sites.
I haven't seen anything either, so probably nothing there.
Yeah, that's to be expected. I think we're in that season. I'm wondering if, we know that we're going to get another piece of DLC soon-ish. We're actually midway through September right now, so that puts us at this interesting time. I would guess we see something I would assume we see something in October primarily, because that does mark their 1-year anniversary of the game. So if they were going to release anything, at least I hope they do anything in October to kind of commemorate the fact that it's been a 1-year anniversary. In fact, around today is our 1-year anniversary of CivCast being launched, so that's pretty cool. Made it to a year, and now we're done, everybody. Goodbye, see you never. This is the last episode you're ever going to hear from us. Wait. That's not how
Happy birthday, CivCast.
And we're out. Actually, no, we're not. We're going to be back with more content, more things, more stuff, and more CivCast challenges. But for Axis, can you throw us a bone, guys? Can you maybe release something new so that I have something exciting to talk about? Actually, we do have something in the news, which is that Mac users got the Nubia patch. So awesome for them. They're finally digging into it. So they got the Nubia patch and, DLC and the actual patch that accompanied it. So that means no Siege Towers for them, right, Wouter?
No more abusing Siege Towers. I mean, you can still use Siege Towers, but not abusing them in the late game anymore.
You're right. I should have specified. I should have said, no more using Wouter's tip for Siege Towers as your
no
end game.
No more tanks rolling up the Siege Towers.
You get to use them as historically appropriate.
Boo.
Boo. Siege Towers for everyone. So that actually ties into our first main topic for this week, which is going to be addressing some changes with the CivCast challenge, or I shouldn't say changes, but just an all-around recap as to what's going on, because we realized, and this is exactly why these things can be a little bit tricky, because we're working on Windows machines and having the latest updates prevented us from having a problem that a lot of other users ran into. Wouter, do you kind of want to talk about this a bit? Because you were chiming in a lot and trying to troubleshoot this with people. Do you mind maybe recapping, since you especially wrote that new nice post to summarize?
Yeah, so because people were having a bit of a problem with the seed, and I get it, using those kinds of seeds is kind of tricky, especially if you haven't done it before. And, well, personally, it's just a whole mess because you need to have the exact same patch and everything, I think, as well. So it's kind of tricky. So what I did is I actually saved the setup that we used. And you can download it from the Reddit. It's the top post. I sticked it as a comment in the Reddit post. And there you can download the setup. I put instructions where to put it in your folders as well. I also made a turn one save for the people who don't know how to use the setup, both with CQ UI mod, even though it's not completely working with the latest patch still, but it's workable. And one for just vanilla players with just the DLCs and scenario packs on. So if you have a problem, like you don't have all the DLC or anything like that, or miss a scenario, please post there and I will make another save for you. But the setup should still be working no matter what patch you actually use. So if you don't have all the scenarios and stuff like that, then you can still use the setup as long as you have the Nubia patch, because then they introduce actually loading in the setup. And you can find the setup if you go to advanced setup or when you're starting a new game. And then you can just load the setup that I provided if you indeed put it into your My Documents folder, My Game, Civilization 6, Saves, and then Single. And the button you're looking for is Load Configuration. And there you can just load the configuration and everything should be set up. The seed will be implanted. The maps and everything will be set correctly, and even the players. So you can just press start game afterwards and you should be fine to go and play the scenario that we set up for you.
Yes, very good, Valter. I appreciate you. Your post was very succinct there and had a lot of good helpful links for people. So basically, to recap that, if you weren't on the latest version, your people were getting issues where they were loading into a different map. So when people were comparing CivCast challenge starts on our Reddit, they were getting different starts, which caused just a little bit of slight, not panic, but you know, we're like, yeah. So if you're one of those people that already played through and got to the end, we're still counting that in as part of the challenge, just because you know, we don't want to make you pull your hair out over a CivCast challenge. But it's just, you know, the unfortunateness of not everyone being on the exact same release cycle with patches and DLC and all of that stuff. So but good thing it worked out, and thank you again, Valter, for clearing that up for people. So this week,
yeah, no problem.
This week I thought we would continue our conversation on culture, and we've also got a very cool comment. I believe, oh shoot, why didn't I post the name here? I believe his name's Mike. Is it Mike, is this you? One second, everybody. Mark, I'm glad I corrected it. It's Mark. Mark wrote in and gave us a great what if for Civilization. So, you know, Valter, let's talk about this what if, and we'll let this spin off as long as we want it to. We can go as deep on it as we want. But just some ideas here. I'm going to read Mark's message. He writes in and says, I've been playing Civ since Civ 1. Took him a week back in the day to track down the Mac version. Still has the box of it. Anyway, listening to your podcast makes me think what big changes could be really interesting. What if you changed up the start of a game? And he's talking for Axis. Like, what if they were to kind of reimagine Civilization when they make Civilization 7? We're not talking Civ 6 here. It's too late in the cycle, basically, to do that. But what if in the early stages of Civilization, you were picking your civilization itself comes after about 40 or 50 turns of gameplay? That way you'd evolve outside of the civilization choice and build towards a civilization choice. It would be interesting to make choices on the way to being the civ you want. He says, I haven't worked it all out, but for those of us who love the historical aspects, this seems like it would be a really intriguing change. Something to think about. Anyway, enjoy your podcast. Haven't watched videos yet, but love listening to it. Well, thank you very much, Mark, for writing in. We appreciate that. And actually, it's a great setup. I feel like I've seen something about this topic before. I don't have any idea where, but it might just have been in like the historicity of talking about civilization. That this kind of makes sense, right, Valter? That civilizations don't just crop out of nowhere and say, I feel like being the Russians today, and then they just become that. But instead, you know, you play towards a certain thing. What's your initial thoughts on this, just hearing that read to you?
I mean, we have had this kind of a discussion a bit before in a different context, but I think we were talking about the fact as in that you're developing like your own cultural identity mm-hmm. while playing the game based on the decisions that you are making. And I think that ties into this really well. So the first 40, 50 turns, you play certain things, you do certain things, build certain things, and those will pretty much determine what kind of civilization you become. I really personally love that idea. I love playing historical leaders and everything like that, mm-hmm. and that's a lot of fun. But this way, you could actually create a non-historical civilization based upon the way that you play, and your people get their own cultural identity through the actions that you take, the decisions that you make, and everything like that. So that the further you get into the game, the more your civilization evolves. And that would actually solve quite a couple of things that we say, like, yeah, this is not completely historical accurate and stuff like that. The thing we have with switching governments so quickly right now, as in, like, right. Well, we were fascist now, but let's become communist because the bonuses are a bit better. And if you have more of that in like building up your cultural identity, then those kinds of quick changes won't really happen. And that would be really interesting for me, because you really develop a history of your civilization, and that could make great stories as well at the end. Like, yeah, and then in the Middle Ages, I decided to become super religious. So throughout the whole game, I became this super big theocracy religious state that mm-hmm. and stuff like that. That's just those stories that come out of that, and the paths that you can take out of that, that's great. I love that. So I think it's a really good idea.
I like what you just said there, Valter, because one of the things that's the most interesting, one of the most interesting topics that comes out of the CivCast challenge in particular, just because you guys share such great screenshots and stories and all of that, is watching your civilizations develop and how they diverge from one another. Because we usually give you about like 5 choices between leaders. So we usually have some at least double ups, if not a week or a month where you guys are playing as one in particular. So we get to see how you change your path. You know, someone goes religious where someone went militaristic or whatever. And you, like Valter was just saying, you get to see that that divergence, that fork in the road. And that makes for very interesting storytelling. But if you were to do it in this sort of way, where it's like, well, in the very early days, I chose to spam warriors, and so I became this militaristic civ, where they instead cloistered themselves and became like religious or scientific. I mean, and then you make your civilization out of that. I mean, that's how civilizations in the world really developed. And I guess to kind of be obvious about that, that's to say, you know, think of how trade routes in the very early days of human civilization affected things because of ideas spreading in the early stages. That's how you got civilizations that were better at shipbuilding and others that were better at growing this item or, you know, silk or whatever it was. That's how they got their kind of claim to fame, and they, you know, made their own identity out of that in their early stages. So that would be very interesting. That I like that idea that you don't even plan to be Russia today or China or something like that. You just start up the game, realize, wow, if I really leverage a bunch of these local resources, or if I'm going to be really coastal, maybe I grow into this power. Now, Valter, counter question, because when you're saying this, I wasn't sure where you were leaning. Do you think that you would get some more choices to maybe make your own civilization out of this and not like not wind up as being such a pre-created civ? Or what were your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, it's civilization, and if they're going to make it, then they probably will guide you towards one of the existing civilizations, because they always did that. Mm-hmm. But I personally would really love it if they kind of skipped a bit on the historical civilizations and let you truly develop your own civilization. And I can already like kind of see it in front of me, like what you had in Civilization 5, you had like with culture, you could unlock these policies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. What instead is like by doing certain actions and building certain units, you like slowly fill up a bar that unlocks an identity instead of like a policy that gives you a certain bonus, for example, to your civilization. That way you can guide your civilization towards a certain identity and create your own civilization like that. And you can probably, you should be able to name your own civilization. So you could play the Russians, kind of, but with their own separate identity, because it's all alternative history, right? You're not playing the true Russian history yourself. You're just kind of recreating a new Russia with kind of basis upon the true Russia in the past. So that would be really interesting to me.
That's a very good point. You're right. Because right now we kind of play a more, well, I don't know if that's the right way to put it. We almost play like a shell of a civilization, because we don't actually do many of the things that made that civilization what it is today. So, I mean, and obviously you can't expect that from a game of this scale. That's more something to like a Hearts of Iron sort of thing, where, you know, you're making these very minor or very tiny choices that create different cultural effects. Civilization is not like that. You're not having like a tiny coup here or there in your empire that shifts it. Instead, you're saying, well, England had redcoats, so I have redcoats. England had trade, a bunch of naval trade, so I get Royal Navy Dockyard. So you get the very, in a positive way, stereotypical things from those civilizations. And I love that idea, what you're saying about kind of creating your own, even if you do get shoehorned a little bit into these other more bigger archetypes like they have. I love the idea that, I mean, I would just love to design a civilization top down. And I've always thought that if there was a game that was going to let me do that, it would be something like a Civilization game, because it just has the right amount of tools for it. They would just need maybe some more minor things, like you're saying, the ability to rename your civilization. It'd be cool if you could, I guess modders do this all the time, but it'd be neat if you could choose your own flag and such. I don't know. There's just so many possibilities. Maybe you could choose, again, would have to be a whole new like game/game engine, but choose your own units. What, you know, choose who your unique unit is in a way. What do you want them to be? Are you an archer type? Do you guys focus on that in your empire? Or are you, you know, would you rather have stronger naval units? That'd be so interesting, even if it was in its own more like creative mode style of gameplay. I'd love
exactly
that.
And that would fit in really well. Like, if you unlock your identity because you've been focusing a lot on archers, it would make so much sense that you would develop this super special kind of archer unit that is a lot better than the rest, because you have so much experience as a nation that ideas pop up like that, and you just develop a certain special kind of type of unit for that. And in that kind of way, you can have, like, through the ages, like, different special units being unlocked. So now you have just one special unit that's being unlocked at a certain point in the game. It's always set. But in that way, you can unlock different kind of special units throughout the whole game, so that you just don't be stuck with, oh, right, I have really good archers in the beginning of the game, but at the end of the game, I don't have anything special anymore, unit-wise.
Yeah.
So you can keep getting, like, these special units. You can kind of unlock them, and something like that. I would really love to see that.
I agree. I think that that's almost a little bit of what I wanted in Civilization VI more than what we got. We've always talked about, it's a very fine line between making this a strategy game and a grand strategy game in terms of your fine, nuanced choices. I don't think I want Civ to become something where there are so many units in the game that you can't even keep, you know, that has to become a extremely large and unruly spreadsheet. We don't want that. Like, Civilization VI at the moment is one where you have enough choices in units that they are diverse, but in a way you can kind of keep them all in your short-term memory, sort of. Like, there's, you know, there's surely ones we always forget them on the air all the time. But then you're like, oh, yeah, I've seen that unit, of course. My fear, you know, I don't want a game in a way where I lose track of tons of units. But Valter, to your point there, I think that's great, where you're saying, sure, you know, if you're going archer, you're going to unlock something special. I think when I saw Civ 6 in the early days, I wanted something where we didn't unlock every single unit. And they've kind of gone a little bit back and forth with that, with how the tech tree's been laid out, right? Like, there's been times where you could get to the end of a certain area and never learn, like, sailing or something like that, and it didn't bother you. Nowadays, sailing's pretty tied in with your, like, later game production-focused stuff. So where earlier I felt like you could skip some of those, they've tied in some more of those little leaf technologies. For better and for worse, I think. I think it's a 50-50 still. You know, they make the game interesting in one way, but they also make it so you have an extra burden on you at times. And I would like to see it more of this development system, like you mentioned, where if you are focusing on something, that's when you get to unlock it. And I thought we were going to get more of that in Civ 6, and I don't think we necessarily did, or not to the degree that I was thinking.
And I get the point that you're making is, like, you don't want to have, like, so much extra units. So instead of perhaps being a true unique unit, why not make them unlock a special promotion? If you spam enough archers, for example, then your archery skill in your nation is so good that you unlock a special promotion for your archers that makes them different. Yeah. And you can maybe even have, like, three options of that, that you have to make a conscious choice. Like, okay, what kind of bonus do I want to give my special archer?
Right.
Something like that would be really interesting.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good way to do it. I do, to your point, I think we still absolutely have enough room in Civilization that they are not at that overkill point. At least I don't think they are yet. So I think they still have room to grow, but that's a good way to do it. And they've kind of experimented with this a little bit, right? Like, once you get three archers out there, you get the Eureka to get crossbowmen. So
yes.
That sort of concept already exists in a small, different way. But now, I think, like you said, there could be a middle point where I would love to see some graphic change as well. Like, current promotions are fine, but I would like to see something maybe a little bit more unique. When you say promotion, I would like them to kind of evolve a little bit more so that it's not just like, oh, your battleship gained one more strike range. One of my favorite promotions, by the way. But, I want something, maybe give my ship some new look or some new feel to it as well, so that you feel like you're getting something special because you did work for it. This is something you'd have to work for in the game. But it really would, to our points here, it would really make your civilization unique to you then. And that's what I'm craving, is not to be just plugging in little, like, matching all the cookie cutter shapes, like, oh, I'm England, so I have to play to this one strength. What if I want to be England and I'm a pure naval civ and I don't even want to bother with archers? Like, what if I can do that? What if I'm on a map type that lets me just specialize in these ships and I want to do that? I mean, that's a little impractical in a way, right? But still, it's that choice, that conscious decision that, yeah, I'm already doing this, so let me lean further into it. And I guess my answer, or my, like, thought here is Civilization 6 tried to do that. They did a really good job of it, but they still fell a little bit short for where I would like to see it go. At the same time, they're preserving their brand, right? They're keeping civilization, and for that I can understand it.
Yeah, and that's the big thing, like, why I don't think something like this would happen. So if there's anybody listening that is a game developer or something like that, go make this game. I will play the shit out of it because it sounds awesome already.
Yeah.
But what you can do, like what I said with the promotion, you would like to see visual change. That's not a big thing, right? You can just update the sprite, for example, and make a different sprite on the map itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely a possibility. It would be a lot of extra work for the artist, of course, but they could work towards that, hire a couple of extra artists because they know that's going to be an extra workload and go for that way. Because I love it when I would actually see, like, my archers look like this, but now that I have evolved my civilization to become really specialized in that they actually get a different look and feel more unique to me. I won't see them elsewhere because I worked hard for this. Right. I got this, and therefore mine look different.
Man, it is that sweet spot that is very just, I give it to game developers. That sweet spot is so hard to hit because once we start to get into this conversation more and more, I just feel like, wow, it's such a good idea, but just on personal taste, you could go so overboard on accident, and then you have a sandbox game, right? Like, because you say, oops, well, we put in a ton of choices because it made sense to in the early development, and now, you know, as a new Civ player, you go in there and like, oh, wow, there's 10,000 units in this game that can all be upgraded in different ways. Being a little bit sarcastic there, but still it's that point that you need to hit the sweet spot. And Civ does that so well. They give you a lot of choices, but they keep it contained enough that you can learn the roadmap to those things. It's the games that get so large that the roadmap is very obscure. Those are the ones that scare me. And I think you got a good point there, Valter, of how you would kind of get around that in a way is a promotion system. The more you talk about it, the more I like it. That'd be great.
Something that I also really would want to see, which you hinted a bit on before as well, is like a more interesting or like more in-depth, perhaps, is the correct way of saying it, with the trade system. Like, you send a caravan to a certain civilization. Mm-hmm. Right now, you just get some gold out of it and a relationship boost, and that's pretty much it. I think there should be more there, because how important trade was throughout history until the current day. In the past, you needed it because if you, for example, wanted to make bronze, you needed to get tin and copper, which are, except for like three places on the earth, never found together, which simulated international trade and everything like that.
Right.
And that super important for nation building and everything like that. So I want something more in depth than that. I want it to be more important to do international trade with other civilizations, like it truly was in like the real history.
Yeah. Now I wonder how that looks, because it's again, this is one of those things where I agree with you completely. I think that trade is too nuanced or too flat as it is currently. Like you said, you just get some points. You send a unit, you get some points. It makes a road. Woohoo! But it doesn't really actually mean as much as it should have. And I wonder, and this is not the end-all, be-all answer to this, but I mean, I would like to see maybe trade, I just feel like it should be a little bit more impactful on the AIs, I guess. Like, sure, they like you a little bit more for giving them a trade route, but a real trade route was much more impactful. Like, if you lose a trade route, that mattered. Like, you were actively trying not to offend these civilizations in real life, because if you cut off trade with so-and-so, there goes your whatever. Now, my fear, and I don't think this is the point you're going for anyway, maybe, but I don't think so, is with some of these more detailed trade routes in other games, like a little bit, again, that Hearts of Iron sort of approach is a little bit too much for what I want in Civilization 6-ish or the Civ franchise. Like, I understand the idea of not having all those resources, but I guess what I'm trying to say is I trust Firaxis to be able to give you the complexity of it, but to also boil it down enough that it's easy to understand what you're missing and how to get it. I guess for me personally, what I want trade routes to be is more of a cooperative alliance building tool than it is right now. Because right now, they could, who cares? I went to war with you and lost the trade route. Whatever. I'll just send it over my shoulder to Brazil. Like, whatever. Same bonuses.
I mean, what you could do is, like, you can currently trade, for example, iron from Brazil for, even though you have no trade route with them. Mm-hmm. How about if you can just make those kinds of trades if you actually have an active trade route between each other?
Wait, say that again?
Oh. So you can only make a trade for resources and stuff like that if you have an active trade route between each other.
Well, that would make very, very obvious sense, actually.
It would, wouldn't it?
Right.
Because right now, the resources are just flying across the map.
You literally throw
no
them.
And that way, like, catapult. If you know, like, two players are trading important resources with each other, you as a third player could actively try to disrupt the trade route between them and have a big impact on their economy, like it truly happened. I mean, there was a big thing like privateers and stuff like that they were hired to disrupt trade between two nations and stuff,
right?
To stop them. So I think that would make not a big impact on the difficulty of the game, but a lot of impact on how you play the game and what trade means. So it I think something like that would be really, really awesome. And you can bring go deeper into it. Like I played in Civ 5 the Vox Populi mod a lot, which is better known as Community Balance Patch. And in that you had like the monopoly kind of thing, where if you have enough of the luxury resource, you get a monopoly out of it, and it the yields go up. You get an extra bonus somewhat. For example, you gain 4 extra happiness or something like that. Or every iron mine produces 2 extra hammers in your country.
Yeah.
So in that way, it becomes way more important to trade luxury resources stuff like that with other players to try to establish like enough of that resource being in your empire so that you get an extra bonus out of that. That way you can intensify trade so much more and make it so much more a core part of the game where you actually have to pay attention to, which would make perfect sense if you try to transfer to like the real world analog, because trade is so important throughout all of history pretty much.
So you kind of sent me on a nostalgia trip there, because I was thinking in Civ 5, one of my favorite things to do was defend my trade routes, because I just felt like they got plundered a lot more than they do nowadays, at least for the games that I've played. Sure, I feel in Civ 6, this is just an anecdotal thing, but I feel like in Civ 6, my trade routes get plundered in an annoying way. It's like, okay, whatever, you took my trade route. But by the time I get there, the barbarians are long gone or whatever took it. It's like, I can't even fix this now. Like, there's no point in defending this trade route. The problem is gone. But in Civ 5, I would, depending on the trade route, like station some boats out there in the ocean to protect little areas that I knew were getting pillaged a lot. And I don't know what exactly changed that made it different. Maybe it's just the normalization of how trade routes are. They were new in Civ 5 in how they were approached, like in a bigger way. But in Civ 6, they became, you know, they came base game. They're a little bit more normal, a little bit more flat in how we approach them. I just don't have any good stories to share about trade routes in Civ 6, and that kind of bums me. You guys probably know by now I love to play like an economic game and try and accumulate all the wealth. That's just how I like to do it. But I don't have those fun stories in Civ 6 just because I don't know. I've not felt the need to go out and defend those trade routes. To that point, Voucher, I love what you were saying, that the privateer notion. In real life, privateers were hired to go out and disrupt those trade routes. If what you're saying is that you can't trade with, you know, Civilization X because you don't have a trade route going, that could be a huge, you know, slice to your empire. If because what? Right now, even, if you use a unit that is made with iron and you don't have iron, they get some sort of penalty. Well, that
Yeah, they don't heal anymore.
That would be a hugely problematic thing.
Yes.
If you and I are trading and I'm fighting Dan with my units that use iron and he slices my trade routes, well, guess what? He can really kill my units on the front line then, because we're no longer trading and my units are unhealable. That would
exactly,
be
exactly that is exactly what
big.
I mean.
But it wouldn't be annoying to the point that like the game breaks, right? You know, you could work to get another trade route, you could work to defend your routes. Just like in real life.
Yeah, exactly. It becomes more important to actually protect your trade routes. Because right now, I just let my trade routes run. And if they get pillaged, oh, well, I will just buy a new one and be done with it. It makes profit in the end anyway. So it's really not a big deal, even though I want it to be a really big deal. And I would want to have to protect my trade routes through dangerous territories and stuff like that. That makes sense that you, for your important trade routes, actually send military units to accompany them, or boats or whatever, depending on where you are. Throughout history, disruption of trade is so important. Look at the Second World War, where the Nazis were trying to disrupt trade towards the UK to literally starve them out, which closely succeeded. Those kinds of things I want to see. I want to be able to do that kind of warfare as well, just by improving the trade system that there is, as in making it a bit more important, and then the rest of the game will follow that lead. You want to defend them, you want to attack them, and everything like that. And Warfare becomes a lot more interesting all of a sudden, a little bit more tactical as well, but I like that personally.
I agree. I totally agree. A tactical trade warfare. I mean, it makes sense. Like you said, it happens all of the time. It's shaped arguably probably all of the wars in history. I mean, intercepting that's colonialism, that's all of that. Pirates, like, it's shaped so much of history that it's actually kind of odd. The more we dive into this topic, I mean, the more obvious it becomes. It's odd that trade isn't such a big thing. Why is it that like I said in one of the early examples, if I lose my trade route with Brazil, well, I could just trade with Egypt and we get the exact same things. Yeah. That area is too dangerous. You know, maybe I was trading with Brazil and Japan's next to him. I can't send my unit to Brazil. Well, I'll just throw him over my shoulder to the other direction and we'll be fine. Same exact bonuses, nothing new. And like I said, you don't really get much of an AI impact out of it either. It's just, sure, they like you a tiny bit more, but it's not like, I mean, think about this. What's it to be an ally with someone and not have a single trade route? Like, that's kind of weird, right? In real life, like, we trade with our allies. That's how that works. But in Civ, you don't need to. You don't need to. I mean, you probably do once. But then again, to you're talking about min-maxing from episodes past, maybe you don't, because it makes more sense to do more national trade routes within your own within your own country, instead of even sending it to your ally. So you just completely neglect them over there. Goodbye, guys. We don't need you. That's kind of weird. Exactly. It doesn't really fit.
And right now, domestic trade routes are so much better than international in most cases. So that would also counter that problem pretty much, because it doesn't make sense that all your trade is going to be domestically. Mm-hmm. International trade has been a really big thing. And right now it's like, yeah, well, maybe one or two trade routes, but the rest is going to be internal.
Right.
And that way you're going to make it a lot more important. And your trade with every civilization would be truly unique, and not like what you're saying. Yeah, they're the same kind of numbers, so it doesn't matter where I send them. Mm-hmm. Just whatever is convenient right now.
Mm-hmm.
It would make the trade system a lot better.
I would really like that. Also, I have to call out in chat. I think my new friend Lynn, who's been playing a lot of Minecraft with us lately on Twitch here, she chimed in and said, trade has never felt like one of the biggest things in the game. I've always wanted it to mean more. And Lynn can't... Lynn's put 600, 700 hours in between some of the latest games. So Lynn knows what's up in terms of the lack of trade route depth. And, you know, Voucher, the thing is, unlike how we started this, talking about moving into your newest civilization or becoming your civ, this is something that they technically have room to edit a lot of this trade route content in a diplomacy-focused expansion pack. I mean, the idea of, well, you've never traded with me once, why would I want to be your ally? That could absolutely be added in with diplomacy. I mean, totally. Think about all the embargoes that were already a part of the last World Congress. I mean, to cut off trade routes with some civilization or city-states, that was always fun to me. Like, oh, well, I really...
That was actually also really impactful.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you were embargoed by everybody in the world, that was a huge impact on your complete game. Things completely changed massively. So I want those kinds of important feelings back, and that would indeed fit perfectly with a common expansion focused on diplomacy and trade. Literally, that makes so much sense, because they are so intertwined with each other.
Well, I think you're right, and I think we could see it. So that's my hope. I mean, I really want to put more focus on diplomacy and trade, and I know that's my things, and I'm always on about that, but I just feel like those two topics really lead to some of the juiciest, most memorable stories I've had in Civilization. When, like you said, when you get embargoed by someone, by the whole world, now you're on your own because you royally screwed up and pissed everyone off. That's the stuff that sticks with you. You remember those stories more so than, like I said, more so than, oh no, my trade route's gotten plundered for the 17th time by barbarians. Well, I'll send it somewhere else, or we'll deal with it someday, and then you never do. But if you were to say, hey, you need that trade route with, who haven't I named in this episode? Australia, because they have iron and you don't, well, you know, that makes it so much more important. And you've got to have an active trade route instead of just this, like, I'll throw it to you. I'll mail it to you someday. Like that system is kind of obscure that you can even trade without an active trade route running physically between your countries. Don't get it. This turned into a much longer and much more interesting conversation that I think I had even thought of, Wouter.
Yeah, we just spinned it off and came across a really, really interesting topic, actually, that I really love talking about, because this is something that I didn't realize I was missing.
Yeah.
But the more we were talking about it, the more I was like, yeah, this is actually something that I would love to see change in the near future. And it is 100% possible to do that for them as well. This is not that much of an in-depth change that the whole game would flip upside down.
Nope.
Well, in some way it is, but not like we need a complete new game for this.
Right. It's not like you're playing a whole different franchise. I think to your point there, it's very much in the scope of what an expansion pack should be, right? Gods and Kings, we add religion into the game, period. Big.
Exactly.
You know, next one, we make trade a big thing in Brave New World. Is that the first time we had trade routes as Brave New World? Am I crazy here? Now it feels
I think it was before Brave New World already, but I'm not completely sure, to be honest. It's been a while since I played vanilla Civ 5 without expansions.
Yeah, I know. It's so weird. The wiki says vanilla Civ 5 and Gods and Kings. I don't know if I'm actually going to get any good information off of this, because it's become so basic to us at this point in the cycle that it doesn't feel new. But I swore, there was something big about trade routes in Brave New World.
Brave New World, international trade routes, according to the Steam page. Build your cities into hubs of international trade by land and sea, creating great wealth and prosperity for your people. Also spreading religion, cultural influence, and science. The number of trade routes increases through the advancement of economic and technologies, the creation of wonders, and the unique abilities of your civilization. Will you connect to a closer city for a lower payoff and a safer route? Choose a longer route with more risk for the bigger payoff, or perhaps point your trade route inward, sending vitally important food and production to the far corners of your own empire.
Uh-huh.
So indeed, it like the active management of trade routes became part back there. Because in Civ 4, if I'm remembering correctly, you also had internal trade routes and stuff like that, and international trade routes. But they were all like based like by the civilization people themselves. You didn't actively trade. I couldn't
more like
be misremembering.
Numbers? No, I feel like you're right. You're jogging my memory, because I do remember there was some sort of internal something, like you could send food or production, I think. But it was more just a numbers game, wasn't it? Like you... It wasn't really visual.
I think it was something
dynamic.
Like that would automatically make some trade routes or something like that.
Yeah.
And it would give you some gold or something like that. But I don't. I could also be confusing this with a different game, because I know other games do that as well.
Actually,
and
you're
like
me
a civilian economy would be really interesting, but I don't think it would fit well in the Civilization series itself that much at this point. We are, like you said, really used to now actively managing these trade routes and stuff like that, and it works really well as well, so I don't want to get rid of that and replace it by a true civilian run trade scheme or something like that.
I agree, but one thing I want to say that I really like you reading that aloud, because their talking points for what trade routes were: send it close for smaller rewards but less risk, you know, send it afar and blah 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 blah, all that sort of kind of great wording to it. I feel like that's lost. And again, I know that they didn't market Civ 6 to us saying, hey, Civ 6, we got trade routes, top thing, top billing. But I do feel like we lost the, I don't care if it's near or far at all. I don't even really look at where I'm sending it these days. I just go down my little thing. It says, oh, Kyle, you're going to get 5 production from sending it there. Good, gone, bye, have fun. Don't screw up and die. But I don't care where it is. I don't look to see if the route is safe. Because there's just a lack of emphasis on it. When that's top billing or close to top billing in an expansion pack, sure, you know, you're paying more attention to it because they're guiding your eye to it. But I would like it to be even bigger. And Lynn, who's back in the chat, would surely agree that making these trade routes more important in basically every way is both doable in an expansion, I would say across the board, probably very wanted. I think people really enjoy trade routes. I've not really heard people poo-poo them before. They just seem entertaining. There's big reward, right? We like reward and risk. That's what humans are driven off of. So if we can, you know, make that bigger, make it more important for Axis, I think that will be very, very entertaining. Valter, yeah, any last topics you want to hit on this? Or we're kind of shortish here on time. We got about 15 minutes left to do your little mention. Oh, also, so anything left on this? We got one quick other thing to shout out. Anything for you, sir?
I think I've said all that I want to say. I'm thinking.
Valter,
there's probably a lot more I can say about this, but for now, I think we're good.
Okay. Well, on that note, we'll spin this off to one other comment that I saw on the Civcast subreddit. By the way, guys, I didn't shout that out. I'm always shouting out things, and I didn't do it. Civcast.reddit.com, that's where you can find us on our subreddit. It is growing, by the way. We are almost at 100 readers for just our little subreddit that started a couple months back, which I find pretty impressive. That's a good amount of our listenership moving over there, so we really, really appreciate that. I'm going to have to hit like a button at some point that makes some of these things pop up on screen. I'm going to get better at this Twitch streaming, Valter. I promise. But this subreddit post is by Akira Y Robot. Akira Robot. I don't know how to say your name. Sorry. But they said, I've been a Civ and Colonization fan since the first one. In Civ 1, there's actually a global warming in that as well. If you shoot too many nukes or produce tons of shields... produce tons of shields. I don't know what that means.
I think shields back in the other day were the hammers what we have now.
Oh.
I think right now it's actually cogs and not hammers anymore.
Yeah, it is
so
cogs.
They changed the icons around a bit.
Yeah. If you shoot too many nukes or produce tons of shields, pollution would cover your tiles. Then... you would get a settler to clean it. If no one would clean it, the whole earth would get hotter and your tiles would be changed in your cities. It kind of sucked. LOL. Thanks for writing that in because I've commented there. I was like, I really want that to come back to Civ. It is that dynamic gameplay that I feel like we are missing. And again, not poo-pooing Civ 6 at all because I think what we have is an extremely solid base game, which is what we need. I mean, remember, everybody, Civ 5 base game, not good. Civ 6 base game, great. Now let's blow this baby up. Let's get it to have all kinds of different arms, but do it well. And I think that's what Firaxis has been doing. Valter, would you want this to come back, right? I think that was your note as well from our last episode.
Yeah, I would love to see something like that come back. Especially right now, it would make a lot of sense, I think, with like the Paris Accords and everything like that, that we are really focusing on global warming as a real threat to humanity and everything like that.
What?
So, yes.
Yeah, that's a thing? What?
Yes, it actually is.
Oh my.
Having that in the game would make a lot of sense. Like in the early game, I mean, you could throw in like a tiny ice age like we had in the Middle Ages and stuff like that. It would affect you. And in the later game, if you're producing a lot of hammers and stuff like that, and especially if you start nuking the shit out of everybody like you're Gandhi, then that should have an impact on like maybe you could... if you throw too many nukes, nuclear winter could happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't mean this. We don't have enough time to spin off to this. Maybe we save this for another day, or maybe it's not even that big of a concept. But man, I would like to see some natural disasters come into civilization, period. They're very realistic. You can't tell me we don't have natural disasters in the world. But boy, if there's just a random generator that says, hey, this part of the world, because of how the map is, it's prone to hurricanes or earthquakes or whatever comes in. That would be interesting, in my opinion. You give people the option to turn it off. I can be fair, right? Games usually do that. They let you say, no, I don't want that. Fine. But boy,
so Civ 4 had that with the event system that they implanted back then.
I don't remember that at all.
You had like a certain events that could happen, which could be positive events, but also you had some negative events, for example, an earthquake.
Oh, see, that'd be cool. And I think that Civilization 6 has, I don't know if that could be, well, I don't know. That actually may be something that they could scope into it. That gets to that idea of way longer in way further off in the future slash another game, but it would be very interesting. I think Civ 6 has the cool visuals for it. Like, we have a very pretty looking game that I think if you were to have earthquakes or natural disasters of sorts, like a big old hurricane moving onto the coast, that stuff would look amazing. And Lynn chimed in and said it'd be interesting to see how other civs would react to having a natural disaster, like sending aid or ignoring it. That's fascinating and ties into trade. How would you help, and how many, you know, ally points would that build you to send over, like donate workers or something to help with a disaster?
That'd exactly.
Cool. That would be
amazing.
Cool. Man, and whatever, you know, if it's hey, you could have the Protestant wind all over again, right? You you're having a battle on the ocean, and boom, something hits like that, and all your ships get wrecked. Get wrecked.
Yep. I mean, that happened a couple of times in history.
Yep. Okay, Valser. I would love to. I am all for that conversation on another day, but we are short here on time, sir. Would you like to, do you have a strategy session lined up for us this week?
Of course I do.
Take it away.
So last week we talked about the Congos, and now we're going to talk about Montezuma from the Aztecs. Montezuma is, of course, well known as a warmonger, and I think in this game he is no different at all. His gifts from the Tlatoani is that luxury resources in his territory provide an amenity to two extra cities, which in my opinion is not that important because amenities are not that great. But the big point is military units receive +1 combat strength for each different luxury resource improved in Aztec lands. This means that you just want to spam the whole world for looking for different luxury resources. If you have already 5, that makes such a huge difference in combat. And getting 5 different luxury resources is not that difficult at all. Do know that this is not true trade, so you can't get extra bonuses by trading it with another civilization or something like that. It needs to be improved in your land. But it makes you want to play really wide, conquer city-states who have a luxury resource you don't have improved yet, for example, and just go nuts on it. And that plays well into the ability of like the Eagle Warrior as well, because you want to do it as early as possible. The earlier you get that bonus, the better it is. And the Eagle Warrior it actually replaces the Warrior itself, so it's your first unit that you can actually build. And it has a chance to capture other civilization military units by turning them into builders. And that works really well together. You wanna go after the city-states in the beginning of the game, get a lot of luxury resources that you don't have in your current land already, so that way you don't have to build settlers or anything like that. You just conquer your way through getting the luxury resources that you want. And then you get a lot of builders out of that as well to actually improve those luxury resources. And beyond that, your builders also have the ability to spend a charge to complete 20% of the original district cost. That way you can just speed up your whole game so much. You have a lot of extra cities in the beginning, and you can build a lot of extra districts in the beginning as well, because you get a lot of extra builders that you don't have to build because you are spamming out Eagle Warriors like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So they are really an aggressive and warlike civilization in this game. I would really recommend playing aggressive, at least in the beginning. You don't have to go for a domination victory, even though if you have a lot of extra luxury resources, all your units will be a lot stronger than the enemy units always, so you could. But you could also, after that, after you've established yourself as really strong and build up early civilization, snowball out of control and do science, for example. Their unit building is one that I don't really like that much.
Nope.
Unfortunately, it's one that is in the entertainment complex, and I'm not a big fan of that one, as I've said before. And it provides an amenity, +2 fate, and a great general point. Out of that, the great general point is the most interesting one, but you can also just build a encampment for more great general points. So probably not the greatest building in my opinion. But the rest, I really love Montezuma. He's a really fun civ to play as. In the beginning of the game, you just go on a rampage through everything that's near, and then you just do whatever you feel like. do you want to go and keep conquering with your now super extra powerful units? Go ahead. So yeah, that's it for this week.
I love it, Valter. Thank you, sir. The Aztecs are unfortunately not one of my favorite civs to play, but they're actually one of my historically favorite cultures. I think that's a good old homage to Age of Empires too, for making them such a favorite of mine. But I find their culture fascinating, and they are a great domination choice if you want to go that route. So
yeah,
I'm very excited. So we got this little so we're missing Dan for probably a couple weeks here, and this is going to be great, Valter. You and I are already off to having a great fun start to this, and I'm very, very excited. So we wish Dan the absolute best. We can't wait to see pictures and such and see how his family's doing. This is very, very exciting for him. Dan, we miss you dearly, but pardon us. We're going to be over here having fun, so we hope you can listen to some of these on the side. Huge thanks to everyone that makes this show happen, all of our patrons and all of our awesome community members that support this show each and every month. We are over at Patreon at patreon.com/CivCast. You guys are amazing. Seriously, we had another donation in the past week, so that's great. We are at that point where we're almost hitting the Kyle Plays Retro Civ games. So if you're sitting there shaking your head that Kyle can't remember Civ 1, 2, 4, whatever, I'm going to go back and do a playthrough of those if we hit that goal. And we're so close. I'm going to say we're like $9 short. It's ridiculous. So we'll do those all on Twitch. By the way, Twitch is, our link is twitch.tv/KyleDempsterStudios, much as the same with all of our branding. If you want an easy link to find our Twitch and all the rest, you can head over to CivCastPodcast.com. That's going to give you a link to basically everything you'll ever need in life. You got your iTunes link, your Android links, you know, everything, Valter. You know, food. No, there's no food
everything.
There. Everything. No yes. Food or water. We don't have that. You can buy specially CivCast branded bottles of water. We can't ship international. No, I'm kidding. We've got, what else do we have there now? I'm distracted. We got Discord links. We are building a super cool community over there on Discord. That place is bumping these days. Thanks to everybody that goes over there and shares. Really cool little setup where all the subreddit posts get moved over to like a special channel. So it's easy to keep tabs on what's actually happening in both places. So you guys are really cool for helping with all of that. Again, that's all civcastpodcast.com. Again, Twitch links, Discord links. That's where people can submit topics. Or you can use the email that is civcast. Why am I not remembering what are my own email address? civcastpodcast@gmail.com. It's not like it's different than the website, but I just blanked. And I think that's it. Shout out to our friends over at Non-Toxic Gaming. We love you guys. Keep on keeping the internet safe, friendly, and fun. Valter. I almost said the ending. But remember, Valter and Dan's tips, their strategy sessions, their big half hour ish shows are up on Patreon. So that's the July. What month is this? That's the August shows. I'm losing my mind here, everybody. The August shows are officially up there now. So if you haven't listened to those yet, go snag those episodes. Huge thanks to everyone again, and until next week, just one more turn. You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. For more shows like this, visit KyleDempsterStudios.com.